It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Patrick Beja joins John C. Dvorak and Jill Duffy from PC Magazine. We'll talk about South by Southwest, anonymous apps, are they bad for the internet? And should the United States relinquish control of DNS? It's all ahead on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 449, recorded March 16th, 2014, Left, Right, and Sunday. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple and Android carrier products are worth at gazelle.com. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet with coworkers and clients anywhere. Share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing. Even present from an iPad. Start your 30-day free trial of GoToMeeting today. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button and use the promo code TWIT. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 30 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 20% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code TWIT314. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TWIT to receive $10 off at checkout. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech. The week's tech news dissected, disseminated, inseminated, and then regurgitated by Mr. John C. Dvorak.
That is, we're celebrating show 600 of the No Agenda show today. In fact, I just left finishing the show.
Congratulations. Now that you're two shows a week, you're going to really up
we're
those numbers
them,
fast.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you, John, for being here. Channel Dvorak and NoAgendaShow.com. Patrick Beja is also here, formerly of the Phileas Club, now just Patrick Beja.
You know, just Patrick Beja. Well, you know, there's Le Rendez-vous Tech, but that's for people who speak French, who are sophisticated enough to, you know, embrace the language of love.
And who do you work for? You have a job.
Yes, I do.
Who do you work for?
I work for a video game company called Blizzard, so I will be abstaining for commenting on
any World of Warcraft news. You're going to abstain. Are you coming to America for GDC?
No, I'm not.
You should.
I'd like to, but this is really, you know, I'm in PR, so we do more public-facing stuff.
Right. GDC is where developers meet. We had earlier, well, I'll tell you a little bit about that in a second, but I also want to welcome somebody brand new. Jill Duffy is here from PC Magazine, first time on the show. Hi, Jill.
Hi, everybody.
From New York, New York. It's good to have you. A gamer, so you can talk about World of Warcraft.
I wouldn't call me a gamer too much. I did work with the GDC group for a number of years and with Game Developer Magazine and Gama Sutra. But I know a little bit more about the development side than I know about the actual entertainment side.
That's an interesting point. Yeah. I mean, I guess you could develop without actually playing them. But I always feel like people who develop games play them. Why are you watching the show, John?
I went to the thing to find the live pop-out chat room. You push the button. It's not here.
We broke the internet. I don't
it's
know.
Not the first time.
irc.twit.tv in the browser bar. See that bar up at the top? That's where you enter in addresses for the internet. Just try
IRCDOT.
No.
Yeah,
just a period.
You type
IRC,
you said
period.
Dot.
Yeah, I said dot. That's a mistake. It's a period. Mm-hmm. IRC period.
Okay, P-E-R-I-O-T.
No. Just put a dot there. Huh. And then...
A dot. All right, you got a pen?
Don't double space
you got
after
a pen?
It.
Dude, all right. That's a good question. I bet you John does, in fact, after every period when he's using his typewriter, add two spaces.
You know, that's a habit. That's a funny thing.
It's
to
a
mention.
Hard habit to break.
Well, it didn't. It takes about 6 months, actually.
So you haven't done it in a while.
I haven't done it for 10 years or more.
Is it on a computer you don't care about it anymore?
it just doesn't look right. In fact, thinking about it, I'm not sure why it was ever.
Why did we ever do that?
Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask. Where does it even come from? It
comes from a typewriter.
It's from monospacing.
Yeah, right? Monospacing.
Typewriters used to have different amounts of space in between the characters. And once we had computers where we could have different typefaces and things like that, the spacing is automatically corrected. So you have things like ligatures are easier to type because of spacing issues. So
we now have proper kerning.
Although I believe in Microsoft Word, you can change it so that if you are one of those habit double spacers, it will always just take it out for you. And for cranky editors, there's the find replace all function.
I actually remember reading an article. This is really nerdy. About where the two spaces after period came from. And it actually goes way, way back, as I remember. James Felici, the author of The Complete Manual of Typography, says that the early history of type is one of inconsistent spacing. And he actually refers to monks and manuscripts and things like that. This is from creativepro.com, and it's about double. I remember reading this, double spacing after a period. Here's 1774, Caslon. Nice font.
Yeah,
nice typeface.
Yeah, beauty.
In the first printing of the United States Declaration of the Independence, two spaces. Wow, look at that. This one, big space between the periods and the... I don't know how we got into this. It really doesn't have anything to do with
it. Yeah, I don't know what you're doing.
Here is from Bembo. Remember Bembo?
Oh, yeah,
Bembo. 1495?
Yeah, I knew him.
I somehow this just kind of stayed in my mind. I remember reading this. Anyway.
Did you just find out about this recently that you only use one space? Is that the deal?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I've been typing two spaces, and now I actually did get in trouble when my kids were little because the fourth grade teacher. Okay, there's another one. Remember in the old days when you were typing a paragraph, you'd begin the paragraph, you'd go
indent,
in.
Indent, yeah.
Indent.
Yeah.
You'd tab in one.
Five spaces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then nowadays we don't do that anymore, right?
Rarely.
So Henry's teacher expected him to tab in.
Oh, so he looked like a schmuck.
And I said, Henry, we don't do that anymore. And she graded him down because he didn't tab in. Talking about antiquated.
Yeah, no, I would have taken that. I would have sued her.
Yeah.
That's what I would have done.
Yeah,
you know, Leo, I really love coming on the show because usually on the internet, I feel like I'm the older guy. I remember a time
internet. John and I are the older guys. Thank you
for making me feel young.
Hey, speaking of which.
That's what we do.
25 years ago, March 12th, 1989, Sir Tim Berners-Lee, he wasn't a sir yet, soon to be Sir Tim Berners-Lee, had a twinkle in his eye.
Yeah, and then what?
He conceived of something he would later call the World Wide Web. He wrote a little memo to his...
I remember that. I do remember.
You remember that?
I wasn't there.
To
it
his
was
fellow physicists. I am stunned at the number of people who confuse the World Wide Web with the internet. Did you see...
It's actually... I used to be complain about this, but now I just gave up. To 99% of everybody, the World Wide Web and the internet are the same thing.
Not true, obviously.
No, it's not true because your email's not done. Well, actually, most of the time it is done on the web.
Yeah. If you just type in happy birthday internet, you get all these results from people who think that the World Wide Web was the internet.
Yeah, the internet was.
Not true. The internet is in fact closer to 50 years old.
Yeah, 1969, technically.
But to be fair, it's with the web that it really took off. And
sure.
It's really the UI for the internet, right? So it is fair to make it the most important and momentous occasion of the internet anniversaries, of which there are many.
And we're in the golden age of the internet and the World Wide Web. 10 years from now, we're not going to be able to do anything.
It's going
to
be worse.
Porn's out. Spam is in. Phony baloney ads. My favorite ads that you get, these great ads because they're so talented at targeting you, ads for stuff I just bought 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
On every page.
We're targeting you. Hey, you know, people who bought, the Depends undergarments, often buy more Depends undergarments, and that's, they just show you the ad again.
I've never seen an ad for that.
No, I don't know what you're talking
about. Have you?
Mm-mm. So, I think we could talk about the Malaysia flight. Is there a tech angle to that?
No, there's not.
Well, what's interesting is that in this day and age, I had a airline safety inspector from a major U.S. airline in studio a couple of days ago, just by chance. Mm. I won't say his name or the name of the airline. It's a big airline. And I said, are you guys fascinated with this? He said, yeah, because it's kind of hard to understand what happened. In this day and age, for a plane of that size, for instance, to disappear with all the technology. Now, we know somebody turned off the transponder.
Yeah, but there's all kinds of other...
Eight cars was turned off. And interestingly enough, the transponder was turned off. Then he said goodbye, good night to air traffic control. Then he turned off eight cars. Or maybe it's unclear the timeline. The radar...
All things unclear.
It's very odd. Don't you feel... Now, are you guys going crazy with this on No Agenda?
We've decided that most of this is comprised of lies, and the plane's probably parked somewhere with a bunch of dead people in it. That's kind of how we finished our analysis.
You think... whoa. Why would they be dead?
What are they going to keep them alive for? It'd be great if everyone was, you know, pleased as punch and they were all alive in some remote island or something, but... I don't know. Something's crazy about the story. We just have to wait. I mean, I think the speculation at this point is out of control.
Yeah, it is, clearly. But don't we love mysteries? I mean, it's like straight out of Lost.
Yeah, but this is... Yeah, it is. But this is like... it's too much. It's too much to take.
All right. All right.
Ooh, I got you off the track. Great. I'm doing my job, chat room.
But where could the plane be? What could have happened to it?
No, you think you just asked a minute ago?
All right. Did you see this is a very weak week.
What about the Icon story?
Carl Icahn, what's he up to now?
No, I can.
All right.
Or you can't. I don't care.
The Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers will, and this is why we have a Frenchman with us, will no longer be under the aegis of the United States of America. And I think you have to blame this a little bit on the Snowden revelations and the fear around the world that the U.S. is perhaps not a benign government. On the other hand, this has been going on for a couple of years with Russia and other countries kind of trying to say, no, we should run. Yeah, that's what
you want.
We
want to run it. You guys
stink.
You want
Vladimir Putin running the internet. What is give us the Parisian point of view.
Well, I don't know that it's the Parisian point of view, but my point of view is definitely in line with, I think we've talked about this on the show before, but in line with what you just said, there's definitely concerns about one country having such a prominent role in running the internet. But on the other hand, a lot of people are saying... We don't want the U.S. to be doing it. Maybe partly because of the Snowden thing, but also, you know, it had been in the minds of people before that. And the thing is, personally, I think I would rather have the U.S. running it rather than an assembly or a body, a multinational body, where China and Russia and other countries that are, you know, less reliable than the U.S. or the West in general have their say, especially in the internet and where the war about free speech and surveillance is happening now.
Let me give you the background, a little bit of the background on this, and then I have a statement that Vince Cerf emailed Ars Technica. He's one of the fathers of the internet, and certainly somebody we respect and admire, and a former chair of ICANN through 2007.
What did he say?
So in the early days of the internet, it was invented kind of here, Bolt Beranek Newman under DARPA, SRI, Stanford, and there was a guy, John Postel, at the University of Southern California, who was one guy in his office, and if you wanted a domain, a number... Or a set of numbers, if you wanted to, you know,
some
a big,
IPs.
You'd go to John, and John would say, "Well, yeah, let's see. Wait a minute. I'll give you 64.0. How about you want a B block, an A block? What do you want?"
Days are over.
So
that was the way it should still be.
It was enough. And then John passed away. But even before then, IANA, which was the organization that he ran, gave way to the ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. Kind of under the aegis of the U.S. Department of Commerce, more recently under NTIA, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, which is a division of the Department of Commerce. The key is the domain name system. In 1997, the domain name system was transitioned from basically a government project into this private hands as ICANN, although under the oversight of the United States. ICANN meeting coming up next month in Brazil. Brazil and other nations very upset about the NSA. Brazil, in fact, threatened to build its own cloud, its own internet. That'll work.
Does anybody think, just to stop your story here, does anybody think if the thing, let's assume that it was run all along by Russia, does anybody think that the NSA still wouldn't be collecting the same data?
Right.
I mean, I just don't buy that.
It didn't give them any inside track.
Between, yeah.
No, it's just that with the NSA story, there's obviously a little bit more concern about the U.S. basically running the internet, as some people understand it. I think there's also a lot of American guilt in that somewhere. It's like, oh, right, you know, we have this imperialistic attitude towards the world, and maybe we shouldn't be running the internet. And I think this is one example where actually we're happy to let you handle this. Let you just do it. It's fine. Again, at least for me. But there's a little bit of that. That don't you guys feel that sometimes? That sometimes Americans feel like they have to be more respectful of the world. And
well, that's interesting. We got to bend over backwards.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't know if it's accurate, but it's a feeling I get sometimes. And sometimes it's justified. I'm not saying it's completely unnecessary. I think there is a little bit of over boasting or over obliviousness to the rest of the world sometimes.
Yeah, there's
but
that.
In this case, I'm not sure.
So Vince Cerf was the chair of ICANN from 2000 through 2007. He's now at Google. He's a fellow at Google. He was co-inventor of TCP/IP. He said a statement to ours. He said the announced change would ultimately eliminate the contract between ICANN and the NTIA, the contract between ICANN and the Department of Commerce. Why do I keep saying Congress? Commerce in the U.S. and leave it to ICANN and the internet community to create a transparency and accountability regime that's rooted in the multi-stakeholder model of administration.
What does that mean?
He says, Okay. Basically, this is a major step toward implementing a global system of internet administration where there's no one country.
No, it's going to go to the UN, and the UN's going to implement all the crap the UN does, including all its kind of freedom of speech limitations because of their edicts about hate speech, and you're going to see sites disappear. Well, that's a hate speech site.
I don't
site.
Think
it's
so.
It's gone.
I think that the
okay, well,
I really think
I'm losing a bet when you say that.
You want to make a bet?
It's too late. I already made a bet.
What was the bet?
The bet was with Adam.
That I would say that?
That you defend this crazy notion that should be...
Well, hey, it's not going to the UN.
I agree with our French fellow here. He's got the right idea.
It's amazing.
It's not going to the UN.
Mm.
They're going to be...
It'll be a UN operation you watch by the end of the day.
Well, even if it's not the UN, the problem is you're going to have... If you start giving it to someone else than the U.S., Of course, the situation is not ideal. Ideally, it shouldn't be run by one country. But still, if you go to someone else, then you can't go to another country. You have to go to everyone. So even if it's not the U.S., you are going to have
a bureaucracy.
China,
you're right.
Russia,
you're going to be setting up
you're
going to
have to... And you're going to have to, first of all, it's a bureaucracy, sure, but that's not my main concern. My main concern is that you're going to have to listen to China. And if China has, you know, a bunch of deals, economic deals with your country, of course, you're going to want to please them somewhere else. And as the NSA scandals have proven, this horrendous invasion of privacy, people don't give the weight to the internet that they give to real life, even though we all know in the audience, you know, on Twit, that it actually is as, if not more important. And so I do worry that the internet stuff and, you know, the free speech aspect and all of that is going to go by the wayside because we have to protect the factory deals and the exchange deals and all of that. So if China
I don't think that's going to happen. The Department of Commerce
maybe not.
Has even said, we're not going to give it up to the UN or another country. The IETF has worked very well.
Where have they said that?
Right here.
They're not going to give it up to the UN?
Commerce officials indicated they wouldn't give up oversight, this is from Recode, of ICANN to another government or intergovernmental organization, which would include the United Nations. Whoever takes over would be required to maintain the security and stability of the internet domain name system.
This doesn't make sense.
Meet the needs of global customers and, according to a Commerce Department statement, quote, maintain the openness of the internet. This makes perfect sense.
No
one country should be
okay, so they're not going to give it to a country, and they're not going to give it to a consortium of countries. What are they going to give it
to? It's already something. Well, in effect, is a consortium, but not just of countries, of stakeholders. And it's what it's how the IETF works, the Internet Engineering Task Force, which frankly, arguably, is more important because they determine the protocols that run over the internet. It shouldn't be run by the U.S. Department of Commerce. But shouldn't be run by any country, and it certainly shouldn't be run by the United Nations.
You know, these guys have been – this has been a decade long, this fight. I remember I've been down to ICON a couple of times. They've shipped you down there, and they lecture you about how horrible this is going to be because you're going to have exactly what Patrick said, almost to the letter. You're going to have these vested interests because, no, we can't do this, we can't do that because, you know, you're demeaning us, you're demeaning China in the case of his argument. And we can't have these kinds of sites. They have to be shut down. We have to do this and that, take them off the domain system. I agree with all
that. Well, if that happens, that's scary. And if that, you're right. That's something we want to watch out for.
We know that. I think the Americans having it are so paranoid and conscientious that I think we've done a really good job of maintaining this thing. It's like you don't look at the internet except for the NSA, which is just spying on just streams. You don't look at the internet and say, geez, this has been poorly managed. I'm surprised it's even up today. It's been very well managed. It's actually astonishing how well it's been managed. But let's fire the guys. Let's fix it. It's not broken, but let's fix it. That's what I see.
So John is agreeing with me too much. It's scaring me a little bit. So let's take the other side of the argument.
Yeah, take the other side.
The internet is made of things that it's astonishing that they work, and yet they work very well. And you mentioned Wikipedia, I think someone did. Anyway, Wikipedia is one example where if you describe it, you think it's never going to work. It's a bunch of people who can go and edit pages all at the same time, all the way they want to, and we're going to build an encyclopedia out of it. And it would have seemed ridiculous. It did seem ridiculous a few years ago. Actually, it works. So maybe the stakeholders and the people who know how to run this thing will find a system which is not necessarily involving the special interests or the particular interests of various countries, and will manage to devise a system that will make it collaborative and decentralized and efficient. So I hope they will. I'm just worried.
Jill, any thoughts?
Patrick, well, I don't want to jump on Patrick's analogy too much, but I would say that Wikipedia is not really a great analogy because it does have a lot of bias in it, mainly male bias. Women don't contribute to Wikipedia, and there's a whole culture and history behind why women don't contribute.
Really?
To
that's
Wikipedia
true?
There are
not
much.
A lot of female editors on Wikipedia?
Can you believe that? It's like 1 or 2%. It's so small.
Really? But why would that be? Is there a discrimination, or is there less interest in doing it?
It's a very, very big can of worms to open right there. I mean, I could go through the culture of editing and having people respond to your edits, the way people are treated, the way women say, I don't want to get into this because right. I see the way that it happens and what goes on there, the kinds of communications that people are having. I don't want to even start with that.
Yeah, can I interrupt you for a second? Because I think you're missing Patrick's point. I don't think Patrick was discussing the politics of Wikipedia and why or why not women get on it, or anybody else for that matter. I think he was just trying to say that here's a crazy idea that kind of works, that we just stumbled upon, that did not look like it was going to work, and it seemed idiotic when it came out.
What I want to say about the analogy, though, is that sometimes, because of our own perspective, we don't see what's missing, right? So we may not see, as Americans or as Westerners, what's missing from the perspective of just having Westerners or Western countries manage this.
Right.
Okay, I buy that.
So I'm not saying it doesn't work, and I'm not saying we haven't done a good job so far, but could it be better? Of course.
Well, it won't be better. Is my experience, and I, as one of the older guys on the show, my experience, anytime anything has changed like this, it just worsens. It's like when they bring in the new boss. The new boss is not as good as the old boss. He's crappy. And it just deteriorates. It deteriorates over time. And we're going to see the same thing. So I'm telling you, this is the golden age of the internet. Be happy, because you're not going to see it this good in the future. You'll see.
Women typically perceive Wikipedia to be of lower quality than men do. This is from Wikipedia's own article on systemic bias. Less than 15% of contributors on Wikipedia are female. 8.5% of editors are women as of a 2011 study.
So women hate the Wikipedia.
But what's interesting is that bias shows up in the way Wikipedia is perceived on a gender basis. I had no... Thank you, Jill. Thank you. I had no idea.
The most common page that people point to is whenever they say the top 100 female American writers. And they're like, so the top 100 American writers is all men? Like, we weren't allowed to be on that list?
Yeah, because that's American writers, and you're female.
Right, and let's get this male writers.
Right. That's a very good wow. All right. Yeah. Actually, there is a fairly large story, and we're going to cover that in just a second, about GitHub. GitHub's first female developer, a woman who was, in fact, pretty outspoken about the lack of, or at least the attempt to have a lack of gender discrimination on GitHub. Julianne Horvath has departed GitHub. We'll talk about that, and I'm glad you're here, Jill, to represent the... Is it sexist to say the distaff side? Should probably look that up.
The distaff side.
Does anybody even know what that means?
I do, and it's very insulting, Leo.
I think it must be. I'm going to have to search Wikipedia to find out what that means.
Well, you won't get a woman's perspective if you do that.
It's a staff for holding the flax, toe, or wool in spinning. Or,
there you go.
The second one, a woman's work or domain. Oh, my God, it is sexist. I apologize.
I told you.
But at least there are 100 top female writers. That's the good news. And 100 top male writers.
Yeah. I think these kinds of things are all bull crap. Top this, top that. Says who?
Lists are stupid.
Says who?
Lists are
We've
stupid.
We've talked about lists before. It's all made up. They're all made up.
Did I tell you I got nauseous earlier today?
Yeah, you were sick as a dog, I understand. You put a virtual reality thing on your head?
I had an Oculus Rift on, and then... We were interviewing these guys. This is right before the show. Who did this amazing kind of mocap suit? What that was? PRIO.
What's a mocap suit?
Motion capture.
Motion capture.
Oh, thank you, mocap Jill. With all the little dots on it.
Yeah, it's YEI technology, and they have a Kickstarter, but it's not. So that's what's cool about this. They've raised almost $250,000 two weeks to go.
Okay.
Where you put this really interesting, it's nine sensors on your elbows, your tummy, your hips, your knees, your feet, your head. And then you could play a game and shoot and stuff and crouch and everything, which is kind of cool. Kind of like Kinect. There it is. There's the video of it. But, hi, Paul. How are you? He was just here. But then, see, that's what you're doing.
Okay.
But just connect without a sensor because they don't need a sensor because it's smart. But then they put the Oculus Rift on my head.
Yeah. Well, you have
and that's the VR
monocular
helmet.
Vision, though.
But that wasn't it. It just, it took me about 10 minutes and then I just had to take it off. I was nauseous. Have you used anything like that?
Not that anybody? That made me sick.
Oh. Jill, have you used the Oculus?
I'm one of those people I get too much vertigo from it. Yeah. I can't even play a lot of 3D games.
Yeah. There are people that can't go to a 3D movie.
Yeah, I don't.
Actually, yeah, I'm not good with 3D opposite. Movies either. Yeah.
You're the opposite. You can't go to a 2D movie.
2D movies make you sick. That's because Hollywood is degenerated.
Yeah, I think so.
I tried the Oculus Rift, and I'm one of those people that doesn't have the stereoscopic vision.
Stereoscope.
So it doesn't do anything on me.
Yeah,
and I was with friends, and they were trying it and going like, "Oh my god, wow!" And they were expecting me to do the same, and I was just sitting there like an idiot, and it didn't do anything. I was just, looking around, and so I'm very sad. I'm not one of the people that can enjoy the Oculus Rift.
Yeah, so you could do the thriller movements.
That's thriller. That looks like a lot of fun.
Anyway, it was actually. It was really cool until I got nauseous. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle.com. Gazelle is a great place to go when you want to get rid of old technology and get ready for new technology, new phone in your future. Maybe you'd like to get rid of your old iPhone. Let's just take a look right here. What is an iPhone 5 from AT&T? 64 gigs. What is that worth? What do you think, John?
$205 bucks maybe, or $255 if it's unlocked?
Yeah,
that'd
that's
be
awesome.
My guess.
They give you instructions on how to unlock, too, which is really cool.
So, wait, they give. Why would they do that? They have to pay another $50 bucks.
I know. That doesn't seem like a good idea at all.
No, it doesn't seem like a good
idea.
They
say it's easy. Here's how. The reason is they can sell it for more money.
They can unlock it themselves.
No. You have to unlock it because you're the customer. You have to go to AT&T.
So they'll give you $50 bucks if you unlock your own phone, essentially.
Yeah, because it's worth more. Gazelle is awesome. They'll even buy broken iPhones, broken iPads. You can get cash for your BlackBerry. I don't. How many places can get money for a BlackBerry? HTC, your LG phone, your Motorola, your Nokia, your Samsung. You got a Galaxy. You know, I think a lot of people have maybe a Galaxy S4, and they're getting ready for the Galaxy S5. Here's a nice thing. Now, I know the S5's not out, but this quote is good for 30 days. So get a quote on all your gadgets, and then hang on. You have time. You have 30 days to take advantage of it. Get a new phone, transfer the data over, and then when you check out, they'll send you a box. They'll pay the postage, throw it all in the box. They send you cash. You can get a check or a PayPal credit, get paid fast. Or if you're an Amazon user, get an Amazon gift card. They bump that up 5%, which is nice.
That's a good deal.
G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, Gazelle, like the antelope. Gazelle's paid more than $100 million to over 700,000 customers over the last few years. Gazelle.com. Sell your gadgets today at Gazelle. I don't know if you can use that in France. You may have to be in the U.S. to use that.
I don't think we have Gazelle in France.
That's awesome. But it's
an awesome service. Yeah.
It's a great idea. So, do you know Julianne Horvath? I've not met her.
I don't know her. No, I don't know her.
So GitHub, we should explain, first of all, what GitHub is. It's a very widely used source control software, right? Where, so if you are working in a group of programmers, you can all work on the same project. You can check out the latest work, check it back in after you've made your changes, keeps track of version control and all of this. GitHub is an open source project, but it also has a website and a commercial side, github.com. A lot of people use it. It is a great piece of software. And I always think of it, because I like open source, kind of as being, you know, kind of hip and cool and with it. Apparently, it's not the best culture for women. She has worked for GitHub since 2012. She says it was fairly small then. She said at the time, the culture was supportive of the women on its staff. She was the only female designer or developer on the team. And I remember that she defended GitHub. There were complaints, but she defended GitHub. She says, now I had a really hard time getting used to the culture, the aggressive communication on pull requests, and how little the men I worked with respected and valued my opinion. She wrote this in an email to TechCrunch. I loved the idea of GitHub because it was a place people went to make things for people who make things. She said it was a boys' club. She felt she was being treated differently internally due to her gender. And now she's quit. Any thoughts on that at all? I mean, I think this is really something we need to address in general in the tech industry.
This goes along
with the Wikipedia story where women feel like it's too aggressive of an environment and it's not a place they want to be.
Yeah. I mean, she didn't go into a whole lot of detail about exactly what was said, but she did give an interview with, I believe it was TechCrunch, and kind of mentioned that one of her bosses or one of the co-founders' wives said, let's go out for drinks. I want to talk to you. And during this conversation, she said it got to be a little bit personal and it got to be a little bit aggressive. And the wife was sort of asking her for a lot of details about what she was working on. And she was insinuating some things about her work.
Oh, dear.
And I don't know. I have a hard time thinking that that's all that happened. I have a feeling that this was a building problem that was going on and on and on for months, and there must have been something that made, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back, but we don't quite know what that is. And then Julianne Horvath tweeted at one point, my only regret is not leaving or being fired sooner. What I endured as an employee of GitHub was unacceptable and went unnoticed by most. And I think that unnoticed sort of speaks to what I was mentioning before, you know, this bias that men don't always see or know about. So it's sad that she was there for 2 years and that she was, I mean, 2 years at any company is a long time. You know, you get to know everybody there and you become part of the culture. I kind of hope that she wasn't unhappy that whole time, but I would like to know a little bit more about what went on. It's hard for women to speak up about these kinds of things because of the retribution. I believe she at one point, you know, got the death threats and rape threats online, as all the trolls like to throw at women. But I kind of wish she would speak out a little bit more about what happened. And I think any woman in that situation is going to be afraid of their reputation and their career prospects going forward if they become the center of attention and the backlash that happens with a, you know, back and forth with a bad employment.
And now, situation. By the way, on Secret, there's a bunch of character assassination against her, which is sad. Secret has really become kind of now the place you go if you wanted to fame somebody anonymously.
I think there was something saying that she was notorious for not accepting criticism of her work. And I want to know, what was that criticism? What was the nature of it? Right. How was it expressed?
It would be nice to know. And I think this, by the way, this kind of thing is going to be out once the United Nations takes over the internet.
I do wonder if it's a it sounds like Wikipedia maybe isn't, well, I don't know. I wonder if it's an aggressively sexist environment or just an aggressive environment, which isn't hostile to anybody.
There's no question that the internet is a sexist environment at the
moment. And hostile and full of trolls.
It's full of trolls. It's full of people who like to criticize and hate for just the sake of it and because anonymity and all of that. That's no question. But specifically about women, we all have a few tech industry actors that are women friends. You know, we have friends that are women, you know, Veronica Belmont and, you know, others, and all of them tell you the same thing, and you can see it on their the places they interact with people on the web. It's horrendous. It's terrible. You have, specifically on the matter of sexism, you have some absolutely unacceptable things that are happening. You were talking about rape threats and death threats, and guys don't have to deal with that. And I think there's a sort of societally acceptable sexism thing in on the internet, the same way that we had maybe at the beginning of last century societally acceptable anti-Semitism, or maybe in the 50s.
Or racism. Yeah.
Racism.
But, exactly. What's like, different here is because it's anonymous. You feel like that racism went under a rock. It wasn't acceptable socially anymore, but that it didn't go away. And now that it can be expressed anonymously, sexism, racism, anti-Semitism are being expressed much more vigorously because people are anonymous.
Maybe a little bit, but she's talking in her article on TechCrunch it's not even, that's the worst part. The anonymous thing everyone has issues with, but it's not even anonymous. You know, it's like you'll make a horrible or even snide comment. Let's not go into the really outrageous. A snide comment, a comment, you know, about some girl who dresses that way or this way or just... And you'll do it, and if someone is shocked by it, the reaction of most people is going to be, oh, you know, I'm just making fun. I'm just
joking.
I kid.
And it's like if you would say something about, you know, a black person in the 50s or 60s, or about a Jew in Europe in the early 1900s, and I think, but you know, my understanding of this situation, and I'm not a girl, so I don't have a very good grasp on this, but on the internet, it's now okay to do these things to girls, and it's completely accepted, and it's shameful. It's really something that we have to take a stand on, and we have to talk about it, and we have to change the environment, because it leads to real problems for you were saying earlier, 49.99% of the population, yeah. And it's unacceptable.
It's a loss. That's kind of the big point. Is it's a big loss if half the population feels uncomfortable participating in something.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've seen some studies that show that this same culture goes back into the classroom in STEM classes, where you have men who came up learning this stuff, men who ended up teaching it. You have 80-90% male classroom. You put a woman in there and they very often drop out, especially at the collegiate level. They get a few days into this class. They don't like the way that people communicate with one another. They don't like the way that they're talked to. They don't like the way that they're dismissed, and they leave and they go over to the other kinds of sciences like biology and psychology and some of the softer sciences, because there's a more equal environment there to learn.
Here's in a related story, an interesting discussion going on the ethics of anonymous apps. And Secret, I think, has really brought this forward. Mark Andreessen, P. Marca on Twitter, started the conversation. It's really interesting to see him use Twitter with numbered posts. It's as if he doesn't want to write a longer piece, but he ends up writing a longer piece at 140 characters at a time. He starts, "I never really like to criticize any startup, and I won't in this thread by name, but there is an important topic that must be discussed." He's asserting that software can condition human behavior. How software design deeply influences the human behavior that results. And he says there are programs, especially now, that are being created that encourage negative behavior, tearing people down, making fellow souls sad. Such experiments start out as naughty fun, end with broken hearts and ruined lives. In the end, everyone regrets participating in them. And it, clearly Secret,
you know,
is
this
what
is,
he's talking
you know,
about.
This goes back to the old CompuServe days, where you had these groups together, and you'd always have these characters that come and you get into these debates, and if they ganged up on you, you had all kinds of issues.
Flame
and
wars.
It happened plenty. That the women weren't even involved at the time, and you had to go through this. It was like some sort of a rites of passage, as a matter of fact, and you'd get criticized ridiculously and told you're an idiot.
It was really horrible.
And it was really horrible, and it was men only, by the way. And then the women walked into it later, and then they didn't like it. Of course, we didn't like it either. But, this is just – this is what develops into the bullying meme where, oh, God, you're being bullied. And I just go back to the – like somebody saying bad things about you, they're not coming over and knifing you. And it's like the old sticks and stones thing that we used to hear when I was a kid. It seems like that's been gone by the wayside, and everybody's got to be nice to each other. I'm just not buying any of this.
Do you reject the notion, and it does sound a little bit like people who say games make you violent, the notion that software, though, can somehow condition your behavior and maybe make you act worse than you would act otherwise? Or is that nonsense?
I think it could bring out the worst in you.
Yeah.
Because there's a different part of the brain. There's a different part of the brain at work when you're typing out a message. You're saying things that you're not necessarily – writing is different than speaking. It's a different part of the brain. It works differently. And you'll say things in writing that you probably wouldn't say to somebody in person. Somebody in the chat room says, words hurt, Dvorak. Yeah, if you're 12.
No, they can. And I think – I think they can.
Well, everybody does, apparently thinks they can. And they – yeah.
They don't hurt. Sticks and stones, et cetera, et cetera. They don't hurt in the same way that a punch in the nose does.
Or a knife.
But it can be devastating and or a knife.
I mean, there is a difference between a couple of tweets and, you know, or a few messages on the message board. And so I'm going to come back to the whip question of women and the barrage of hate and threats and trolling that women get when they talk about something. I mean, I don't think it can be quite equated. Both are not really the same. I'm not the best person to talk about this, but especially if a woman, which is the worst, especially if a woman starts talking about this specific issue, which makes everything worse.
Secret has now changed its algorithm so that when we detect a first name, we display a reminder not to defame people.
Oh, that's sweet. Now, I made that commentary a minute ago, and the chat room was all over me.
They're being mean to you.
Yeah.
They're trying to hurt
Dvorak's
you.
Oh, Dvorak's an old
They're giving you
fart.
Mean words.
He should
They're...
quit. When he's gone, that's great. And this is the kind of a-holes that are out there. And watch these guys go into this. It's astonishing to me. But this is what happens all the time. That's one of the reasons I don't even look at the chat room on No Agenda. But it's like, if JCD hit his head on the glass ceiling, his life would be say he wouldn't say such stuff or something. Quit, you're old. I mean, this is
well,
the kind of this
the
is
thing
the
is,
you can't
we are.
So you can't have an opinion anymore because you get shouted down by the masses, usually a masses of a bunch of anonymous jerks. And I don't want to say the chat room is full with them, but they're in there. And they're all over the
we're
place.
We're used to this. We are to various degrees personal. We are public people.
It still hurts.
And where
it still
is?
Hurts.
Wait a minute. Where is this chat room maniac that keeps should be kicking all these people off this chat room? This chat room is notorious. So get these guys off. You see them? You can spot them. Get them off. I'm all for it.
There'd be nobody left, John.
Wait, no, there's one guy said I'm a good guy. Jill, speak up. Why are you quiet? They say. Jill, speak up.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm sorry. I'm not in the chat room. I'm trying to focus on.
Don't
what
be in the chat
here.
Room. Trust me. It's not worth
but
it.
But also, you know what? I don't agree with everything that Dvorak ever says. But I'm not going to call him. I'm not going to call on ageism here either. I think that's right. Just as bad as being sexist. You know?
Do you use secret?
How old you are has nothing to do with what you know. And
that's what I say.
Do you use secret, Jill?
No. I think. That kind of stuff is just not really for me.
I can't resist. It's a very bad habit.
Anything, let's face it.
No, I have no impulse control.
None.
It's like paparazzi. People's magazine, gossip magazines, right?
Yeah.
It feels like a fad too. I don't know that it's going to be around for very long.
A lot of what you see on Secret is garbage, like made up stuff, fake leads, and so forth. But it's really, and it's taken Silicon Valley by storm. You're good. You're better off out of it, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm going to delete it tomorrow.
What?
And it's also
after.
Very
delete what?
Very Secret. Silicon Valley centric.
It is. It's very Silicon Valley centric. But that's partly who's in my address book, right?
This is the effed company. It's just the new version.
Oh, that was a great site.
See.
Philip Kaplan, PUD, he said, you know, if you can create a site that all the content is generated by the users and you just sit back and collect the money, then you're golden.
Yeah, it's a slot machine.
It's very, it's a good way to go. Veronica Mars is back. Kristen Bell's TV show, they went to Kickstarter to raise money. Some people said, really? You need to raise money for a Hollywood movie on Kickstarter? But I think they demonstrated there was an audience and... The movie has been made, and
yeah, part of it. I paid. I participated.
Did you?
Yeah.
Why? Was it a great show?
Zach Braff's movie. Yeah, I loved the show. And actually, this should be interesting to Jill as well. And keep coming back to the women's thing. It was one of the first TV shows I saw where there was a strong woman character that was not in there. That wasn't there because she was sexy or pretty or anything like that. She was a strong female lead, and it was well written, clever. It was a teenage show, but still, it was very efficiently made. And I was very happy that I could, you know, help Rob Thomas.
He's the director, the creator.
Yeah, the creator. Yeah.
Raised $5.7 million, and they made the movie.
And then they DRM'd.
And then they said, oh, and by the way, we're going to release it on Flixster using Ultraviolet. And the community
Ultraviolet.
Went, what the hell? They've backed down. To their credit, Warner Brothers has backed down. And they said, we are going to sell it on Amazon and iTunes without... don't Amazon and iTunes both have DRM?
Yeah, no, they do. But they actually pay you back for the portion, I think, of the Kickstarter that you had to pay for that, for the digital download. So they give you back $10, basically. But you know, it's good.
That is nice annoying. If you pay for Kickstarter to get the Veronica Mars movie, and this is they give it to you on Flixster via with an ultraviolet copy protection, that's a little frustrating.
Yeah, it is.
But buyer beware on Kickstarter. Frankly, I don't. And I always felt a little weird that they raised money for a Hollywood movie.
Yeah, it makes no sense
by going to real people and saying, "Hey, give us money."
But the thing is, the movie would not have existed if. the Kickstarter campaign hadn't been successful.
And it wasn't the entire amount of money needed to make the movie, not even close, but it told Hollywood, hey, look, there's, you know, there's 20,000 people. Actually, I'm sorry, 91,000 people who are willing to give us actual money to make this
movie. Same with Zach Braff's movie, Wish I Was Here. There was a big deal made about the fact that he was even more because he's actually a film director who had a successful movie before. And but, you know, I don't see what the big deal is. If people are willing, people aren't completely idiotic. You know, they know what they're getting into. They're willing to give money to the guy to get his film off the ground.
It's their money.
Yeah. I mean, I have a Patreon.
Are you using Patreon
for money? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For a new show or?
No, for Patreon, it's for Le Rendez-Vous Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very thankful of all the people who are giving money. But I think it's difficult to do for a new show because I really think you have to have a community behind you that trusts and knows you and knows what to expect.
But there are a lot of people. So Patreon, in fact, I think just raised something like $20 million. The idea is very focused on the arts. Although Kickstarter was when it started, the idea that and what's unique about it is you subscribe, in effect. So you say, not only I'm going to give $5 now, but I'm going to give $5 for every episode.
Yeah.
So that's worked out for you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm in a little bit different situation than others who are using Patreon. I do less shows and it's not my sole income,
right.
But it's worked out enough that it's a very decent supplemental income. So it's really an interesting model because, as you were saying, it's sort of a subscription and it allows content creators to get a reliable source of revenue. Whereas Kickstarter, a few people tried to do Kickstarters for different creative projects, but the problem is you get one big chunk of money to get your thing off the ground.
It's a one-off.
And then that's it.
Yeah.
And then you don't know what's going to happen in the next, you know, maybe the next year or whatever. You have to do it all over again. Whereas Patreon has this, it's actually Jack Conti from Pamplemousse. You know, he's a content creator.
I love Pamplemousse. Yeah, and I'm glad Jack's doing this. The only, now Brushwood told me this because he's raising and has raised money on Patreon.
Yeah, Tom and Brushwood and Scott Johnson, a bunch of people are doing
He said is that the number is deceptive because you give an amount, but there's also you could set a limit for how much total you're willing to give. So
yes,
he said the amount you get is actually more like half what you see on the page. Is that your experience?
Because, well, for me, my show is on twice a month, so it is a little bit less for the second episode. Although, you know, I haven't invoiced yet. I haven't activated it yet.
Right.
It's just this month. So it might end up that I don't get, you know, half of what people have promised. But for the second episode, people can set a limit and the limit can be equal to what they want to give for the first episode every month.
Right.
So in the case of Tom and Brian, they're doing it for Court Killers and they have four episodes a month. So if someone, they have to go through, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 episodes. If someone sets a limit to 1 or 2 or 3, the next one is going to get less money.
I see a lot of people doing this. I think it's great because it gives you another choice for monetization. And the more you have, the better, obviously.
And it allows people who appreciate you. It's an alternative to advertising in a sense, although it doesn't have to replace it completely. But it also allows people who enjoy your content enough to support you. And there hasn't really been, especially for podcasting, there hasn't really been an appropriate way of doing that until now. And I think Patreon might be part of the answer to that for some people. And so I'm very happy they're raising money because I'm terrified now that they will go under and take all the money away.
I guess they're not going to, given the number of shows on here and the amount of money these shows are raising. What John is the guy to talk to because No Agenda has a very interesting model.
Yeah.
And it's worked.
Works great.
But you're going direct. You're not using a third-party service.
No,
you're going
why
direct.
Why do we want to use a third-party service? We can.
They
we
take
know
a
how
cut,
to, we,
right?
8%.
Well, 8%'s not bad.
It's not good.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we've tried different podcasters, at least in France, have tried models where you would do it yourself, basically just have a bunch of PayPal buttons on your website and people could subscribe that way. It's worked for some, but maybe not. I don't think as well as it does on this system, because for some reason, going through that proxy and having them handle the payment and the managing of everything, I think people got used to crowdfunding in general. And for some reason, it's easier for people to commit to that kind of thing with a site that can be somewhat equated to Kickstarter.
Do you find that you have to beg for money a lot, John, though? You spend a lot of time asking for money?
Here's the problem that people have with podcasts that they want to make listener-supported. They have a huge, and I've talked to people about this, they have a huge reluctance to ask for money.
Yeah, I don't like doing that.
No, most people don't, because they generally, most people are in a position where they used to either work for somebody, they're always, they have a, not to say it so bluntly, but they have a slave mentality, and they feel that they should either be paid by someone or they should be subservient to someone, and they don't have the wherewithal to take this the leap of faith and say, look, here's what we're providing, here's what we need to provide it, and we want you to be the person that helps us do this. We're going to do an end around the advertising model and all these other models. And the problem that most podcasters have is they cannot do this sincerely. They cannot sincerely. They put a button up. They say,
guilty.
God, give. Yeah, they feel guilty. Yeah. God, maybe if you just and then they get $5 and they say, just don't ask again because, you know, they already gave us $5.
Right.
So if you're not into it at the right psychological level, you can't be successful. And so falling back on Patreon to me is just a cheap trick. It's just like, let them do the work and I'll just.
I don't want to ask. But you have to ask. Don't you ask
I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to disagree with you, John. I did ask, and it's maybe a little bit more challenging even in France, where money is a bit more dirty, and you don't really talk about it, and you shouldn't want to be making money because that's what evil capitalist people do. So I did have to sort of challenge myself to do it, but I did ask for money.
I would have to hear what your pitch was to evaluate the sincerity factor.
We asked for money in the early days of Twitter.
You wouldn't make the money you're making because
that's the reason I didn't do it. Because we made $10,000 a month or something like that. But
that's not bad.
And I wasn't willing to beg. I really wasn't. But that wouldn't have supported more than one show a month.
And it's not begging, by the way.
Felt like it.
Well,
no, I don't think it's begging.
You weren't doing it right.
No, I wasn't.
I would say, you know, if you guys haven't seen Amanda Palmer's TED Talk.
I love that talk.
It's a little weird,
yeah.
But it's a really wonderful sort of thought experiment about this whole issue of how do you ask for money? How do you get people to just support you directly rather than having to have an advertiser or a sponsor as the middleman? And it's a really interesting piece.
It brought up a lot of stuff for me, especially when she went to the house of the poor people and they were sleeping on the floor so she could sleep in their bed. It was like, yeah, I don't know. What's interesting about her is she, before she became a rock star with the Dresden Dolls, she would stand in a bridal gown on the street corner.
She was a statue performer.
She was a statue performer. Boston.
Yeah.
And she would hand out, you know, flour, and then people would throw money in the bucket. So she got very used to asking for money, something we're not used to. I mean, I think human, you know, it's not a natural.
You know, I was on a really interesting panel earlier this week, and there were some people on it from the advertising end of mobile apps, and they were talking about, one guy had a point that the best way to incorporate ads or any kind of sponsorship really is to remind people with some kind of transparency, look, what we're doing costs money to put on.
Yeah, we do that all the time.
We need to make the funds. And just that little bit of human touch to say, we want you to know that this is the way that it works.
Yes.
So please listen to our wonderful sponsor.
I agree.
It goes a long way.
That's just being honest.
Right now, this week, is the KQED's got all these guys coming on. Pros.
This I hate. You're sitting there, you're watching a perfectly good piece on Pete Seeger, and then all of a sudden they stop and some bozo spends 20
minutes
saying... Two bozos saying, give us money.
Yeah.
This I hate.
Okay. So you stop listening to KQED as a protest?
Yes.
Oh. Huh.
During pledge week. The rest of the time I watch.
So you're just essentially a taker.
Yeah. They get plenty of money from the Koch brothers. I'm not worried about it.
Curiously, they do get plenty of money.
I know they do. Yeah.
They used to get plenty of money from the Gates Foundation, but Bill and Melinda decided the show was boring. You know about this.
You're talking about McNeil Lehrer NewsHour?
Yeah, well, the NewsHour. It's not McNeil Lehrer anymore.
No, but you know what's interesting? McNeil and Lehrer still own it.
Yeah, no, I know that.
Yeah, so you're right. It's called the NewsHour.
So the Gates Foundation said, or Bill, or Melinda, but I think it was Melinda. She said, this show sucks. It's boring. Can't you jazz it up a little bit? Wear some colorful clothes.
No, something. We're so PBS.
They pulled their money. And PBS had a big meeting, and they said, "Okay, we're going to fix the show. And when it gets back to your when you're satisfied,
give us some money."
Yeah, they have yet to come back.
No,
but they have jazzed up the show. Anyway, the little story that nobody cares about.
I feel like I like our model, but I think that what I do like is that there are many models, and whatever the more models,
we can't
the better.
I don't believe uncorruptible news show can be done with your model.
Right. No, I agree. We're so corrupted.
Well, you're not that corrupted, but you're corrupted because you take advertising. You're not going to say anything bad about the advertisers.
Well,
why would you?
My original plan was not to take advertising for that very reason. Not so much that I felt it would corrupt us, but that I wanted to be above suspicion.
Right.
But
nobody cares that much about it in general. But if we're going to do the kind of show that
which is scurrilous.
We have a lot of insulting things to say. And I would say that we couldn't
do it.
We get it's happened with you. Every once in a while you have some jerk on one of your shows who says something. And, I can see you cringe.
Actually, Brian Brushwood and Justin Robert Young took NSFW off our network and are trying to support it through the Patreon model because they wanted to be able to be nasty.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't let them be nasty.
Right. Which is fine. I don't
see some advertisers.
See why they have to be nasty on that show.
Yeah.
Well, it's called Not Safe for Work. So.
Well, that was my mistake.
Point well taken.
But they don't have, they had ads on when they were on our network. But they really didn't want to have to, in any way modify their conversation.
Well, they would just talk dirty, I think, right?
Dirty, yeah.
Yeah.
I think for a show where you take an ad model, if you grow enough, you're gonna be making a lot more money than you will on than you would on a crowdfunded show. So it is a little bit different, and it's every show is different, and every show is special and wonderful. But there are different factors to take into consideration. I don't think Patreon is going to be supporting shows enough that you could have grown Leo, your operation, into what it is today.
We built $1.5 million studio. That's not going to happen
exactly
from donations. Yet we did raise $250,000 of that from selling bricks.
I bought a brick.
Yeah,
I know.
I like the bricks. I like the bricks.
You did what in bricks?
Huh?
What?
I like bricks.
No, what?
What about them?
How many?
You know those bricks?
You said 150?
$250,000
in bricks?
Yeah, 1,800 bricks.
Good.
And you're not getting that money back. Somebody actually said, I want my money back. And I said, well, okay.
You bought a brick.
You bought a brick. I can't really take it out of the wall. But I said, I'll be glad to send you your money back. And
they bought the brick. You buy a brick, you buy a brick. It's not like something you can return.
Then, and then somebody else said, well, I'll take his brick. But I don't know
how I would have to chisel out the name. Brick's a brick. You're done. You bought a brick.
Well, that's the thing. It's not about begging. You're not begging people to buy the brick. If they think what you do is valuable, and if they think they enjoy it enough that, they are willing to give you money for it, then you have the money. And it's not about begging. It's about asking people, if you think it's valuable, then, I'll take couple of dollars if you have them to spare.
We really wanted to sell naming rights to the studio, like ballparks.
Now you're talking. You might as well
go to the Patrick Beja room.
Yeah. Make it an auction.
Would that be weird if we did that? And now
I'll take that Duffy table right there.
Yeah, there you go. And now the Jill Duffy from the Jill Duffy Memorial Studio in beautiful downtown Petaluma, California.
You're memorializing?
Well, you know. You don't have to be dead.
That's the way they do it on network TV.
And now, from the Esso studio.
They do that, and they also say, and this the sports update is brought to you by. And
I don't mind doing that.
They say five sports scores, and we Samsung paid for it.
We couldn't get anybody to do that, by the way. Nobody wanted to buy it.
You needed to set up some sort of a buzz.
Here we are from Citibank Studio.
A buzz and an auction.
The problem with an auction, like if you get a bid for a buck and no one else bids over that, you got to sell it for a buck.
No, somebody would bid two. I'd bid two.
$2?
Yeah.
Then we got $2.
Okay, right. I'd bid four.
And for the rest of my life, I have to call it the John C. Dvorak Memorial Studio.
No, you do like they do with the stadiums. You do it for a 1 year's contract.
Oh, 1 year.
Yeah, 1 year. And it makes it look like you're moving around.
I was afraid Jason Calacanis would buy the naming rights. That's actually what happened. He would, too. He'd give me $1 million just so I'd have to say it. Now, from the Jason Calacanis Studios.
Yeah, he would.
He would do that.
Yeah. Well, on a TV, he wouldn't do it for $1 million, but he'd do it for something.
Our show today brought to you by GoToMeeting from Citrix, the great way to meet. Not all your meetings can be planned in advance. Things come up, and meetings can be very important to cut through the knot. You know, we have a 3-email-and-out policy. If three emails go back and forth over a topic, we call a meeting. We say, no, this isn't going to work. Let's get all the parties to the table. But sometimes the parties are all over the place. That's where GoToMeeting's fabulous. People working in different offices on the go around the world can get together to solve problems, to discuss ideas. I just think this is such a great tool for business. GoToMeeting from Citrix. Meet and collaborate online. You're seeing each other's screen, so you're on the same page. You can see each other face-to-face, you get eye-to-eye, and you can sign up for GoToMeeting from your computer or your mobile device and launch your first meeting in seconds. I want you to try it right now. Visit GoToMeeting.com. You'll see an orange Try It Free button. If you use our offer code TWIT, you get 30 days absolutely free. GoToMeeting. Fire it up. Invite your crew. Work together. Solve problems. Brainstorm. Be creative. GoToMeeting.com. Please use the offer code TWIT, and here's the part where I say, and we thank GoToMeeting so much for their support of This Week in Tech, without whom this show would not be possible. Why did you bring my bobblehead? We sold these, too. This was not a great moneymaker. See, I'm really not that embarrassed, I guess, to ask for money.
No.
Actually, these are nice, though. See, solid resin. This is not some cheap bobblehead.
I think this is one of the best products you've sold. It doesn't look like you, though. It looks like...
Well, no bobblehead ever looks like anybody. Right?
Except for the head part wiggling around.
This is based on pictures, 3D models from pictures. I mean, but just nothing. It never looks like anybody. It looks sort of like me.
No.
No? Did you see President Obama between the ferns?
Yeah.
I did, yeah. Great stuff.
It's very funny. I like Zach Galifianakis, but I'm amazed that President Obama would cooperate on that.
I was stunned.
It's good politics.
You think?
Well, we've come a long way. Remember when it was a big deal when Bill Clinton came on the Leno show and played his saxophone? That was a big deal.
It was.
And now, you know.
Now they're doing stand-up.
He'll do stand-up on an internet show.
Yeah. No, that was, I thought it was humiliating, to be honest about it. I didn't like it.
Yeah. It's
well, the difference. Sorry, go ahead.
Would a French president have done that?
Well, you know, our French president was caught on a scooter going to his lover's house. So
because he was wearing business shoes.
Yeah. That's what gave it away. Yeah. But no, I mean, the difference between
I love
the Bill
show.
Clinton thing and the Obama thing was that he actually went there to promote the healthcare.
He felt it, like this is how you get to young people.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
It was incredibly efficient.
Yeah.
So you can argue. I mean, no. I guess a lot of people were arguing he should be doing serious stuff and not this internet thing. But you know, actually, he made something very efficient.
Go where
he
the managed kids are.
To inform.
Who signed up? How efficient was it?
I don't know. No, they say they no kids at all have signed up for the healthcare,
and they're for good reason.
They're immortal, well, as we all know.
That's a different topic, but there was the bulk of the healthcare.gov traffic apparently is now coming from Funny or Die. So
Nixon, Truckee's pointing out Nixon. He was on Laugh-In. Remember, he went soccer, Yeah. To me?
Suck it to me.
Suck it to me?
Yeah, so, I remember that.
I guess there's actually a long-standing tradition. Nixon was the first TV president, though. He had ad men running his campaign and so forth. In 68.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. You can look it up.
Okay, I'll look it up. It's on the internet. It is? They don't lie on the internet.
They don't lie on the internet.
I'll look it up on Wikipedia.
Ken from Chicago is saying that there was a surge of enrollment on healthcare.gov.
Because the president was cool and hip. And I don't want no spoilers. You could actually have a spoiler on Between the Ferns, believe it or not. But the ending is great, I thought. Very funny.
Okay. It was a good ending.
Let's talk about South by Southwest. Jill, did you go to South by?
No. You know what? I went 2 years ago, and after that event, I said, I'm not going anymore.
Why?
It's too discombobulated, and I think it's still really best for people who are there for the music and the entertainment and right. for the technology angle. Like, CES was really plenty. I did not need to be at South by Southwest.
And you were there?
Oh, yeah.
No, you weren't. Oh, yeah, you lie.
No.
You went to South by?
You can look at my Twitter feed. You'll find that I was there.
Oh, you just tweeted it. That's appropriate because it's a marketing thing.
People saw me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very sad story. A driver plowed into a crowd at a block.
Yeah, I just
street.
Missed
was that.
Was
that on 6th
yeah,
Street?
I saw
or
it. Yeah, it was on 6th Street. Yeah, the car goes down the street.
Two people
knocks
died.
People
terrible.
Over. It's terrible.
23 people injured. He's being charged with a capital crime, as he should be.
No, it's because everybody there's drunk. It's a drunk fest.
It is. And
it's a party drunk fest.
That was one reason I enjoyed Secret during South by Southwest. A lot of people going, drunk, South by.
And that people were posting selfies of themselves plastered.
Yeah.
This is not a good idea.
Yeah. Lady
Gaga.
Did you
see the Snowden thing at South
yeah,
by
so
South?
Yeah, so there was some news. Julian Assange did a Skype interview, which failed. And a couple of days later, Edward Snowden, instead of using Skype, used Google Hangouts because they're so much more trustworthy. And it was a very poor frame rate, but he was apparently, I don't know if it was serious, they joked, he was on 7 proxies. I think he was using Tor to get there.
Why? They know where he is.
No, they don't. He's in Russia.
Oh, yeah. Our intelligence agencies have no clue where he is.
That's the irony of all of this NSA stuff. I think they actually don't. They can't find a 777 in airplane.
If they put Snowden in it, they probably could find it.
Can I? So, okay. I want to say something about Snowden. And I want to hear your
Please
thoughts
don't
on
say
this.
He should be shot.
You had well, somebody on your show saying he
wasn't
should be
my show. It was TNT. No, it was, okay. Yeah, and I'm sorry about that. I apologize to all and sundry.
So, actually, it's not about him getting shot or whether he should be shot. It's the opposite. I think a lot of us have been. I don't know if you've listened, if you've actually listened to this interview, and there's been a couple of others. And. He is incredibly soft-spoken and well-spoken and very precise about what he wants and what he wanted to achieve with his leaks and the care he took in not making it too damaging and the way he approaches the whole problem shows how much it's not about... You were talking about Assange. I think Assange is a lot more controversial in the sense that he's very much of his own personality. And you can feel that there is a lot of him in what he does. Snowden feels very different. And I think that by now, it's been a few months, maybe I can't remember how many,
June.
Maybe eight months.
Right? Yeah.
So 8 months since then. And a lot of us have been incredibly careful in how we were judging this whole affair because we didn't really know enough. And it was the dust was still settling and we didn't know what the NSA did, what Snowden was after, what we knew, what we didn't know. Now, I think that we're in a point, unless there's something incredibly surprising that happens, which is always possible, but now the dust has settled. And I think we can decide which side of this argument we're on. And for my money, I think it's I think it's okay to say that Snowden is a hero. And he's an American hero, and he's an international hero. And he did something incredibly dangerous, not for his own sake, but because he was witnessing, as he says, the constitution of the U.S. being broken left, right, and Sunday. I can't remember how you say this. But, you know, we've seen how the NSA has been... Left, right, and Sunday. There you go. The NSA has been lying to Congress. And anyway, I'm not going to go back through everything that we've witnessed in the past 8 months, but I just want to say it's okay now to say that, to decide whether or not we want to say that he's a hero. I think he is. And I think a lot of the people from the tech community should be taking a stand on this.
Yeah.
And now we know. It's not okay anymore to say, well, you know, we're not sure. It's still unclear. We're waiting to find out more. Now we know more.
And the things we're learning. Now, this week, the revelation was about Quantum, a tool that weaponized the internet, in effect, by allowing the NSA to automate the infection of as millions of computers with malware. Malware that could be used to turn on the camera and take pictures, turn on the sound and listen in.
Well, it's never ending. It's one story.
No, you know, it's never ending.
After
it's never
six ending. Months,
that's what's funny about it.
You would think after 6 months, it would be like, okay, now it's done. But it keeps on coming all the time. And it is to a point where it's clear, at least to me, again, I want to qualify this a little bit, but it seems very clear that the NSA and possibly some parts of the government is breaking the... I hesitate to say the law because they've actually arranged the law so they wouldn't be breaking it doing these outrageous things, but is going beyond the scope of what is acceptable and what they should be allowed to do. And that, for me, settles it. It's clear someone had to blow the whistle, and he did, and he should be commended for it.
The NSA and Britain's GCHQ wanted to add pwn by keyword feature to Quantum. If a user's email through Yahoo or Hotmail contained any keywords that were offensive, like, I don't know, hummus, it would exploit them automatically.
Nice.
It would just go, oh, good, we got him.
Hummus eater.
There are some questions about how well this might have worked, but the point that they wanted to do that is sufficient for the conversation.
Yeah, what they're really looking at, believe me, is words like merger, acquisition. Seriously, this is a blackmailing operation, and it's also a scheme to make money insider trading.
Really? Oh, that's please. What you think?
Yeah, that's what I think.
You don't think that they're actually just trying to find terrorists to protect the United States?
They found. They're trying to find stock tips that nobody else has access to. There's all these laws,
well, either
by the way.
It's not acceptable, is it?
No, it's not. Of course not.
I could live with it if they
were. If I had the stock tip, I could live with
it. If it were appropriately circumscribed as by law, and they were doing it to attack an individual who was deemed a threat to the United States. But that's kind of retail. It looks like they're doing it wholesale. Yeah. Just kind of automatically.
That's the whole point. When I say Snowden is very precise in what he wants, it's exactly what he's saying. He's not saying we should stop spying on everyone, or he's not a privacy nut. You know, he's not saying that should never be possible about anything. We should neuter the NSA. That's not what he's saying. He's saying we should absolutely pursue valid targets. We should have tools to fight terrorism. It's just the mass surveillance is unacceptable, and that's exactly what you're saying, Leo. It should be okay for these organizations to have these tools and to use them in a targeted manner. That's it. We're not against spying. God knows, I'm very much for that, and you know, right, for these kinds of.
There's also
practices.
The larger issue. Mikko Hopponen of F-Protect, the Finnish security legend, he's been around for a long time, wrote that, you know, when you introduce this malware into computers, you also introduce vulnerabilities that other, you know, malicious agents can exploit.
Yeah, the mob.
So you really, you know, this is really breaking things badly.
There's nothing worse than malware.
Nothing.
But what do you guys think about this, about my huge rant? Am I wrong?
Yeah, you're fine with the rant.
No, I think it's time to say. I think it's safe to say that... This, you know, I mean, you can talk about, you know, technicalities like, well, he made an oath that he wouldn't ever reveal this stuff. And
you
did,
know what the no agenda thesis is on this, right? You
I can figure it's the panopticon.
The no agenda thesis is that Snowden, and he said this in the interview he did with the German TV guys. He said he still works for the CIA. This is the CIA's attempt to cut the budget because they get all the money's going to the NSA. And there's a battle going on between these two agencies. And
he told German television, I still work for the CIA?
He basically did, yes.
Really?
Did you ever see that interview that was
on
German
television? Did he say he was involved in Bitcoin?
He says he still has his ID. And as far as he's concerned,
technically, I still work. They never fired me.
Of course not. And he kept calling what he did a mission. I'm telling you, you should.
Why would he admit it?
To German TV, did that even run in the United States?
No.
They do 3 hours, and not one word of it runs in the United States.
It's in German.
No, it was all in English.
Oh.
That's okay. Just listen to No Agenda, and you won't have to listen to Leo's theories. Which is that everything's fine.
It's fine. The world's a wonderful world.
The world's a good place. The NSA are great guys.
I see dreams of green.
And nobody's doing any of this stuff.
Those guys, too.
There you go. Now you're talking.
What a wonderful world this would be. Jill, I'm sorry you had to be here for this episode.
I didn't bring this topic up.
I know I did. I'm trying to find, desperately trying to find news. We will come back and find some news.
There's tons of news.
Good. Would you get a story prepared?
I'll get a rundown for you.
Locked and loaded.
I'll be ready to rock.
As they say in the firearm game.
Do they?
Our show today brought to you by Shutterstock.com with over 30 million. Actually, if you go to Shutterstock, I like doing this. You can see how many total they got right now because they keep an actual count on the site. There are, ladies and gentlemen, 34,793,373 royalty-free stock images right now on Shutterstock.com. This week, they added more than 250,000 new images, all of them curated, carefully selected for quality, and that's just the photos. If you click the footage tab at Shutterstock.com, you'll see that there are well over 1.6 million stock-free videos, stock royalty-free stock videos. Just a great selection of stuff. 22,000 new videos this week. Now, you might say, well, with that variety, Leo, how am I going to find what I need? Give me a noun.
A noun?
Yeah, a noun.
Any
noun.
A cup.
Surfboard.
Surfboard. I like hers better.
Eh.
All right. Well, and I'll show you why. Now, give me an adjective. Because you can
large.
Search. Large?
Glossy.
Glossy.
Whatever she says is gold.
Yeah. That's right. Because I have a bias.
Yeah.
I'm biased.
Yeah, we've known that.
Ladies and I don't know, glossy surfboards. I think these are glossy photos of surfboards. I'm not sure.
No, these are like logos you put on surfboards.
That one looks pretty,
that's pretty glossy. So here's the beauty of this. You can search for nouns. You can search for adjectives. You can narrow it down by color. They have a color wheel. You can actually say, you know, our page, we really focus on the royal blues. So let me search for royal blue glossy surfboard. Oh, there are no royal blue glossy surfboards.
You went the wrong way. You should have gone with cup.
Cup, I would have found one. So here's the deal. I want you to sign up for your free account. You don't need to give them a credit card. What you will be able to do with the free account is get free photo and vector images each week, yours for the taking. You'll also get access to the light boxes. That's nice because you can find an image, save the image, and then use it, share it with colleagues, use it later. You don't have to buy it right away. If you do decide to buy, they have, by the way, they have editorial as well as stock photos. You need a good picture of Bill Gates, they got it. The Pope, you got it. Albert Einstein, you got it. Miley Cyrus, you got it. Mm. It's all there at Shutterstock.com. We have the 25. Yeah, there's the picture of Miley you want. We have the 25 image a day subscription. Weird. This is great for publications. You never run out of great content you could use. Shutterstock.com. Check out their apps on iOS and Android. Beautiful Webby Award-winning app. And it's, if you decide to buy, I invite you to use our offer code TWIT314 because then you will get 20% off new accounts. That's TWIT314. Do not use the number pi. You might be tempted. You might say TWIT314. Maybe it's TWIT314159 and on and on. But no, it's not pi. It's March 14th or March 2014.
Okay.
Yeah. So just, I mean, sometimes people are tempted to use irrational numbers in the offer codes.
Never heard of this.
Do not. Use real numbers, please. Somebody said, pie. Twit 314 at Shutterstock.com for 20% off. Did you celebrate Pi Day?
No.
I had a lot of fun on Twitter. I started posting mnemonics for Pi. And people thought I was crazy.
I wonder why they think that.
Oh, how I want to drink alcoholic, of course, after the heavy chapters involving quantum mechanics.
All right, so let's get some stories that you wanted me to do.
You wanted some right? good, you found some good stories.
Government computers running XP will be vulnerable to hackers after April 8th. I wrote a column about this in the PC Magazine.
Hackers? Who? Everybody?
Which said that Microsoft should charge a little, give a certain, there's a half a million, I'm sorry.
Half a billion.
Half a billion XP machines out there. If they charged $1 a month for support, they could easily make about $3 to $6 billion extra on the bottom line and just support this thing. They already got a group in play that supports it. Why don't you just keep them in business? So that's my argument about XP.
Because then nobody would ever buy
No.
Windows
these
8.
Are things that are they're stuck in place. They're on ATM machines. Banks use XP. There's a bunch of people. They don't want
95% of all ATMs in the U.S. are using Windows XP.
Yeah.
95%.
Support it.
Are you, you know, are you
Do you
of
want
the
your
opinion?
Bank to change the software in their ATM machines, really?
Yeah.
To Windows 8?
Yeah. All right, you're right. They should have never used Windows to begin with.
Well, there's that.
But, wow. We, as Steve Gibson said, it's fine. Go ahead and use Windows XP. He says it's safe.
Yeah, I think so.
Really?
Yeah, I agree with Steve.
Yeah. Didn't you just say... I'm sorry.
No, they still need support. Because
I'm getting whiplash. I can't follow it at all.
Well, this is not...
How about BOS? How do you feel about BOS?
Whatever happened to BOS?
You know,
they dropped the O, it became BS. That's the real problem.
They came this close. Apple was looking at them, looking closely, because the BOS came with the great Jean-Louis Gasset.
Yeah.
Former Apple vice president. And then they had this other thing, the next operating system, next step. And some guy named Steve Jobs, and they were said it was BOS next, BOS, and they finally bought next.
I remember seeing BOS in Paris, obviously a very long time ago, and I was completely amazed that it could read two video feeds from the hard drive
right.
at the same time. It was revolutionary.
Pow!
It was incredible.
Boom!
So Intel's going to 14 nanometers.
Really?
Yeah. Don't you remember about 5 years ago when you couldn't do, you can't do it. You're going to have to need x-rays and all this other stuff. And they keep doing it.
Pretty soon you run out of nanos.
Well,
I mean, 14.
14.
That's 14 billionths.
22 is the
of a meter.
Current.
22 is the current process.
Yeah. 14.
Wow. How, I mean, you can't, when, at this point, you're getting to the point where you're in quantum effects.
I don't know how they can do it. Maybe they're just lying to us.
Are they still using electron beam lithography, or what are they
using? I don't know. I'm
going
to have to catch up with this. I fell behind because nobody writes about this stuff anymore.
You know what? No one does. No one cares anymore.
No.
We care.
We do.
We have
We're
a memory.
The holdouts.
We have institutional memory.
Yeah.
Plasma damage to low-k materials can really get in the way if you know what you're talking about with
no.
this.
No. I don't know anything
process
from there.
Problems. Wow, I didn't know that. That is a good story.
Yeah. And of course, it's in Seeking Alpha. IBM denies giving client data to the U.S. government. IBM was never mentioned in any of these
Nobody
scandals.
Nobody ever asked them. What do we want their client
hey, by
data
the way,
for?
Guys.
We won't do it. Go ahead and ask. We won't do it.
IBM's Watson is now doing recipes, I understand.
This is a bizarre story. So Watson was the Jeopardy playing computer.
Right.
Now
scam.
It's...
Scam, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a scam.
Because they,
there was
because
a little guy in the machine.
No, it's because they could hit the button faster than anyone.
Right.
It's,
you, that's the game, by the way.
Yeah, the game
it has
is how...
nothing to do with the question and answer.
Everyone can answer the questions. Boom.
Yeah. Oh, they all can answer. It's how... It's timing.
Yeah. It's reflexes.
Wasn't that... Like for the first few questions, and then the other contestants complained,
yes.
and then they had to implement a timer that would make Watson push the button in a humanly realistic time.
Yeah, well,
frame.
Still beat everybody.
So,
yeah, because it had the right answer.
What is Watson cooking?
Apparently, Watson is. I don't know. I just read about it being is now doing recipes or something, and I can't imagine. how this...
It analyzed, the system analyzed, according to The Verge, 35,000 recipes and about 1,000 chemical flavor compounds, so it can make educated guesses about which ingredient combinations will delight and surprise humans.
Human. Human must eat food. Try well, this, surprise. Human.
Surprise, I'm sure, is easy to achieve.
Delight, wow. Sure.
What?
I didn't expect
Why am I getting a banana sauce on my sirloin steak?
Friday at South by Southwest, IBM had a fire engine red food truck with a meal plan generated by Watson, including such surprising and delightful treats as chocolate burritos and Swiss Thai asparagus quiche.
Did people have to pay to eat this food?
Humans made it.
Humans.
Creole shrimp lamb dumpling, Baltic apple pie, and Turkish bruschetta.
Turkish bruschetta, what is that?
Only Watson knows. See, now I do wish I went to South by Southwest just to taste computer-generated
foods. There's
probably
a huge line for that thing.
Yeah.
Well, John, you were there.
There was a huge line. That's what I said.
There
what
was
do you think
a
I just
huge
said?
Line for that
there was
thing.
A huge line for that
right,
thing.
Right.
There it is. Delicious. What is that? What are we eating now? Adrienne Jeffries.
See if she throws up.
Mm. What does she say?
Report.
IBM food truck report.
We started this project about 2 years ago. We wanted to see.
He sounds French, so it's got to be good.
Be creative, if they could not only reason about the world that they but
Florian
try to create
Pinel.
New products, things that are
a guy.
Senior software engineer at IBM.
And they are also valuable.
Wouldn't you rather have a Frenchman cook for you than design software for you? Oh, my God, he's got piercings everywhere.
Yeah, he's all Mr. Pierce.
Holy cow. What you want to make, because you have to kind of direct the computer in a certain direction, and then the computer gives you suggestions. It tells you, oh, you chose chicken. Chicken is used a lot in maybe Singaporean cuisine. Do you want to make a Singaporean dish?
And it's called a menu.
This is Ida. Dumb.
That's stupid. All of that power to do that, really.
I love that, like, Epicurus was not good enough, so they had to take Watson
right.
out of the hospital, like, where he was
oh, yeah,
working
he was,
on diagnosing yeah, patients yeah. and, you know, solving problems.
Curing cancer.
Disease. Yeah, no, we needed to come up with a new Singaporeanese dumpling instead. That was really warm.
I think that the IBM Watson team really just wanted to go to South by and get drunk.
That's all just anyone an goes excuse. There for.
Well, okay, if we're being serious for a second, if computers can learn how to cook, isn't it cool? It's better than Hot Pockets.
It's better than Hot Pockets.
Anything is better than Hot
no,
Pockets.
No, nothing is better than Hot Pockets. I beg to differ.
Bull.
Hot Pockets.
You don't even eat Hot Pockets.
If I opened on the Champs-Élysées a Hot Pocket stand, it would be huge.
Well,
would
if they didn't
not,
burn
Patrick
the
Bechon?
Place down, well, then the French should be
actually,
ashamed of themselves.
Interesting thing. One of the biggest culinary stories of last year was that Burger King is coming back to France.
Yeah with
it was a really big deal.
The Royale.
What happened to the French that used to burn places like that to the ground?
Yeah.
I guess the kids who used to go to Burger King before it closed in Paris grew up and are now running the place, which is worrisome. So, no, I mean, right. I think we don't have the same disdain that you guys have for fast food because we take it for what it is. It's a cool thing that you eat when you don't have time. And it's also a little bit less disgusting in our fast food restaurants than it is in yours.
No, I beg to differ. They put mayonnaise on the frites. It's disgusting. Why don't they use Watson to mine bitcoins? That
IBM
would be a
should
good
just take
use.
A server farm and start mining bitcoins. Yeah. I'm surprised these companies don't do that. There's a lot of idle CPU power out there that could be used to mine bitcoins. I don't understand it.
Popcorn time. I'm not sure why this got so much attention and why people were so shocked that this application, which basically was let you torrent, find movies on torrents like Netflix and then watch them, got shut down like in 3 minutes.
In 3 minutes?
What a shock.
3 minutes.
It was like
It was up for, I mean, after the slew of articles, it was up for 3 days and then they had to shut down, obviously. But in the meantime, I don't know if you guys got saw that email, but I got an email from XBMC who was seeing all this happening, and the email was entitled, something along the lines of, want to know what the real pirate Netflix app is, and selling their own product.
And we've got it.
Yeah. I was like, are you really pitching yourself as the pirate Netflix? It's weird.
And because Netflix is so expensive.
Yeah, really. $7.99. Come on. Obviously, this was not on Apple's App Store or Android's Play Store. You had to get it from mega.co.nz. This is the statement. After 3 days, they shut down. Popcorn Time is shutting down today, not because we ran out of energy, commitment, focus, or allies, but because we need to move on with our lives.
What? Why did they even start it in the first place?
3 days. It's time to move on with my life.
3 days. What a bunch. I didn't think it was going to be this much work. I'm out of here.
No, they worked on it. They worked on it longer than that, obviously.
What were they thinking?
They were thinking that the service was legal in the countries where it was. Well, okay. The service was not illegal in the countries where it was not illegal. Obviously, some people disagreed.
By the way, the code is still around. You can download it, build it, and install it yourself. It's not gone. It's on GitHub.
Well, the thing is, it's not doing anything illegal by itself. It's
yeah,
just
that's what the Pirate Bay says.
They always say that.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't store anything illegal.
It's like those little antennas. Those aren't illegal.
They quadruple checked the legality. They said, let's do it.
Yeah.
And 3 days later, we're getting on with our lives. Thank you very much. It's over. Amazon's going to raise the price of Amazon Prime.
$20.
I thought it was going to go higher than that. I was a little worried.
It will. I would just say this is a stepping stone.
The beginning.
Yeah.
It was $79. Amazon Prime gives you free 2-day shipping on anything Amazon sells, not on everything on the Amazon site, but anything that they fulfill. They also give you instant video, a lot of crappy movies you don't want to watch.
There's some good things on there, like Rubicon, the 13-part series that ran once on AMC. Very good story.
Actually, right. Instant video has some better stuff. It's nice in conjunction with Netflix.
Yeah.
You can also, as a Kindle user, borrow an ebook every month.
Right, and they also give you a free ebook every month.
Ah.
I got one the other day.
What was it?
I can't remember.
It was free. What the hell?
It was free. I just picked it, and it was like, now it's on the Kindle.
Is it any book, or do you have a
specific? No, they give you like 6 choices, and, you know, it's a scam.
Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen.
No, these are all.
Bleak House by Charles Dickens. Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain. It's like that, isn't it?
No, not at all. In fact, it's contemporary authors you've never heard of. It's even better.
No, it's even better. So they debated anywhere between $20 and $40. I thought they'd end up on the high end of the
increase. Yeah, they're going to have trouble with $20.
Due to the increased cost of fuel and transportation. If you read the book, The Everything Store by Brad Stone about Amazon, they completely guessed at $79. They had no idea what Prime would cost them.
And what did it cost them?
Well, no one even knows. Amazon's so willing to lose money on something like that. They don't care. It's like, yeah, we lost money on every sale, but we got lots more customers. That's how they think
about Amazon? I don't think that they are so blind about their financials.
Oh.
I think a store that can revolutionize the way that we do distribution and shipping, have it down to a science, have it so pristinely timed within the warehouses. Do you really think that they don't know what's going on with their financials?
No, they know exactly what's going on.
Good point.
They own so many small companies that they are very good at hiding their money. That's what I really
think. I think they know. I think they're willing to lose money to put other businesses out of business.
They're just not going to tell you how much they're losing.
Yeah, and I think they're also willing to lose money just to gain consumers. But I do believe that when they first came up with Prime, they just really didn't know how many people would use it, how much the shipping would end up costing them, whether they would make more the money up in the amount of sales and so forth. I think that was a bit of a guess. In fact, it was supposedly Jeff Bezos who just said, after much debate, $79. We'll see. We'll figure it out from there. But you make a good point because it didn't change for years.
Yeah. Well, I think going forward, if you are an existing Prime member, that this year is still $79. You're if you have an auto renewal, I believe it is.
Yes.
And students actually get a discount. It's half price. from the typical Prime membership. So if you are a student or if you're in a family and you have a student and you can sign up using their credentials, then you get a nice little chunk of change back on that.
Well, there's a tip worth the price of admission to this show.
Yeah. Now how much would you pay, huh?
Well, apparently $35.
So I'd become a knight of the Twit round table?
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
You know, the other thing about Amazon, a lot of its products are just cash registers. Right? The Kindle is a cash register for buying other products in the Amazon store. When I started looking deeply into the streaming aspect of Amazon, I really, really felt like I was getting nickel and dimed, because as much as there's a lot of stuff to be streamed for free, there's also a whole bunch of content that isn't free that is then advertised to you for, you know, $2 or $3 to rent it, $7, $8, $9 to buy it. But it's not really clear if you need to be a Prime member or not in order to stream the content that's paid. So it's this weird thing that you're afraid, if I lose my Prime membership, do I also lose the ability to buy this streamed content that's not free and part of Prime?
Right.
And I believe the answer is that no, anybody can buy it for the price that it is. But it's so like murky in the way that it's designed that you can't tell.
They have, but only in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Seattle, they have a grocery store delivery service, Fresh.
Yeah.
And you can also do Prime Fresh for $300 a year. You'll get your groceries same day or next day early morning on orders over $35. That seems like a lot. I don't know if I'd pay $300 a year for same day.
If you were working in a company in the dog patch area doing web development or software development, and you had 10 or 20 guys there working there 12 hours, 16 hours a day, and they needed to eat, I think you would pay that.
Don't
money.
Give me, no, I want meals cooked, ready to eat.
They'll probably have that available.
I want Amazon to feed me, bathe me, clothe me.
You should just go work for Google.
Wipe my butt.
Google does all that.
I use Fresh Direct sometimes, and they have, you know, a similar thing where you get free delivery, and I don't remember what the price is on that. But the real key there is when you have it in cities where people don't have cars, and carrying a lot of heavy groceries to our homes is really inconvenient.
Huge.
So the ability to order something online, especially like if I'm going to have a party, if I can get some cases of beer delivered to my house and all the food and all the paper products that I need, like that's worthwhile.
Why should you carry a case of beer up your 7-story walk up when you can get some minimum wage worker to do it?
Yeah,
it's that, and it's slavery. Also about if you're starting to talk about costs, it's also about the price. I mean, if I live in a fairly expensive neighborhood, and our local grocery store is really expensive, so if I could order from Amazon Fresh stuff, I would do it all the time.
Safeway does delivery here, and you can't tip the guys. You try to tip them, they say no, we're union. You can't.
That's no excuse.
I know. I thought, what kind of union
is that? What kind of union is that?
That's a sucky union.
You cannot take tips.
I thought that was a strange response.
Well, it probably has to do with some negotiation that took place at one point where the management people, having done unions myself, the management people said, well, you get all this money on tips. We don't have to pay it on a per hourly basis. So they rejected tips and said, because you're going to get screwed by the man.
Right. So they can't ask for tips.
There you go.
So, Jill, do you use this regularly or just for special occasions?
I use Fresh Direct, I'd say, probably a dozen times a year or
so. That's pretty good.
Mostly for special occasions. But, yeah, it is really handy. And there are other grocery stores that have delivery, but the experience of being able to order online, have all of my shopping lists saved, like that's a very Amazon-like experience. And while Fresh Direct is the one that we have here that's convenient that everybody knows, if we had Amazon Fresh here, I don't know, I might probably try it.
New York's next. I mean, what better? You got to go in the major metros where there's huge population density. It's just more effective.
You can get anything delivered here.
Anything?
Yeah.
Anything.
I want a gold tooth. Amazon is, I don't understand this. Amazon Media Streamer. They've been going through FCC approval on this thing. It's more than just a Roku. It's a set-top box that has a game controller. So Netflix and Hulu, yes. It's running on forked Android. That's Amazon does that like the Kindle. And apparently, according to the FCC documents, there is a Bluetooth game controller, which really has a lot of buttons on it. This looks pretty serious. Amazon, I think it's before Amazon has, you know, same day delivery in big cities like New York. And they just kind of bring it to you. We'll have it for you in a couple hours. And by the way, why does Amazon still use UPS? Why don't they have their own delivery
service? I'm surprised they haven't bought UPS.
Yeah, I am too. Seems like that would be a way to save money.
So did you see the new Roku thing? They got a little plug-in deal.
They had that for a while.
Yeah,
the Roku
the new
stick.
One.
Yeah, I have the old
one. It's
got
more stuff going on.
It's kind of an interesting thing. It reboots a lot on me. You need to have a special kind of HDMI port that has power. It's an MLC port. I happen to have one device that does. So you plug it in, and then it gives Roku capability to that HDMI port, which is kind of neat.
Have you been playing with – have you obviously played with USB 3?
Yes.
These new little hard disks that are coming out, they run
fast.
It's astonishing. They go at the same speed as an internal drive.
I know, practically.
No. I have one that goes the little Toshiba guy.
You have slow internal drives.
No, I don't. I'm putting it up against an SSD.
Really?
No, it's not that fast.
MHL, not, what did I say, MLC? MHL port, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you. So this is a $50 streaming media stick the size of a pack of gum, plugs into your HDMI port, does have a remote control. This new one does not require 8 MHL. The new Roku streaming stick, instead of using MHL, requires a special HDMI port. Well, that's what MHL is, to send power as well as video. It has, I see. Now it has a separate USB plug, like the Chromecast that can plug into a USB port.
Yeah, you just plug it right in.
To give it power. That actually is better because while MHL is a great idea, it just didn't take off. So it's the same specs as the Roku One, 1080p capable media hub. I really like the Roku 3, frankly. It's missing some of those features like the remote headphone jack. It's nice on that one.
So what's the difference with an actual Roku box, the regular one?
It looks like the channels are the same.
It's pretty much the same.
It just doesn't have a headphone jack on the remote. It does have dual band A, B, G, and N Wi-Fi, so that's good. But they still will sell the MHL streaming stick, but that's because it's a limited market. They're going to bundle it with TVs and so forth. I'll take a break, and then we'll wrap things up. I'm so glad to have you, Jill Duffy from PC Magazine. Mr. John C. Dvorak from No Agenda, Patrick Beja from Le Rendezvous Tech. Look for it on Patreon.
You know, I write for PC Magazine, too.
Still?
Yeah, twice a week.
Show today brought to you by LegalZoom. You know what LegalZoom is not? They're not a law firm.
I heard this.
But they are providing you self-help services at your specific direction. So it turns out a lot of the things one might want to do with an expensive law firm, you don't need a law firm.
A lot of it's just forms.
It's a ton of it is.
Boilerplate.
It's boilerplate. I set up the LLC that we still run on, LegalZoom. It's $99 plus filing fees. You can also do an S-Corp or a C-Corp. Very simple. Very simple. You know, if you don't have a trademark, you might want to check out LegalZoom. Trademark your name or your product, last will and testament. And there are times when you say, gee, I wish I could ask an attorney, like, what state should I incorporate? Or what is the difference in chapter
I think
S
you should incorporate in the state of sobriety.
Never. That's a boring state. Is that Utah, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Visit LegalZoom.com. This is National Start Your Business Month. John, do you have a business?
Yeah.
You're the business.
John C. Dvorak Company.
But maybe you could sell vinegar on the side or...
You want me to finish the vinegar book?
Yeah. This is National Start Your Own Business Month, John.
Yes, National Finish the Vinegar Book Month.
Everybody should start their own business. If you go to LegalZoom right now, they have a special deal for you.
You know, I forgot to bring vinegar. You're right.
I know.
Oh, that's what you were doing.
A free 3-month trial of the all-new QuickBooks 3 months free. That's worth $119. But you have to enter TWIT in the referral box at checkout. We'll also give you $10 off any LegalZoom service. I love LegalZoom. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, something like a million entrepreneurs have used LegalZoom to start their business, are very grateful that LegalZoom exists. LegalZoom.com. Wills for $69. LLCs, $99 plus filing fees. The legal plan attorneys you can consult for fixed fee in most states. Don't put off the things you need to do. Go to LegalZoom.com now. Use the discount code TWIT at LegalZoom.com. Not only will you get $10 off at checkout, but also a free 3-month trial of the all-new QuickBooks. LegalZoom.com/... Just use the offer code TWIT. And thank you, LegalZoom. Thank you. Without you, we wouldn't be able to keep John C. Dvorak in coffee mugs or whatever it is.
I don't have that many coffee mugs.
What'd you got there? Is that a charger?
Look at this thing.
It's nice.
It's what Chad brought out.
It's like a car battery.
It's a big battery. I put my phone hooked to it. It's like something you'd find at the airport.
We offer this for all of our guests.
Charge your phone here.
Yeah, it says it right on the top.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice?
It's kind of corny. But it has all the connectors.
How many quarters did you put in? All 6 quarters?
I had to put in. No, it's 4 quarters. You got it wrong. It's a dollar.
It
turns itself off, though, apparently.
That's right.
Shortly.
It's like the magic fingers in the bed. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Jill for being here and for putting up with us.
She's a good sport.
What's up, guys?
You are a good sport. What you up to? Anything you want to plug or talk about? This is your chance.
Oh, yes. I have to tell you about my book. I wrote a book last year. It's called How Get Organized, How to Clean Up Your Messy Digital Life. So if you are flooded with emails, if you don't know how to find those wonderful vacation photos that are digital somewhere on your machine from when you were in Tahiti in 2005, I have a whole book giving you steps on how to do this very easily. Everyday things. Anybody can do it. It is not for tech heads necessarily, it's for anybody.
I wish I'd known about this before the show. I'd have been asking you advice all this time.
Well, you'll have to have me come back, I suppose.
I need help. Is it on Amazon?
It is. It is on. It's an ebook primarily. You can get a print copy, but I definitely like the ebook. Where it's supported, there are video tutorials.
Oh.
So those would be on the iPad version. There's a Nook version. There's the standard EPUB. Whatever you use, there is a version for it. I definitely recommend the ebook.
Give us your top tip.
You know, she writes a weekly
password manager. Password manager.
Absolutely.
I had no idea this was something I was so passionate about. I talk about it every time somebody asks me about tips and apps. I'm like, are you using a password manager? Because if not, we have to stop talking right now and you have to get that. And I think a lot of people don't really know what password managers do if they've never seen one before. So one of the videos in the books shows you this is a password manager. This is how it works. This is how simple it is. And they're free. Like you don't have to pay anything to use
Which one do you use?
I use Dashlane, which is no longer free, but I was grandfathered in. LastPass is the other one we always recommend.
That's the one I love and use.
I just use the same password for everything.
That's a shortcut.
Is it 123456?
I think it's monkey 123, right?
No. As I remember. So you never guess it. That's the reason it's so effective.
It's a scam.
I get no spam.
It's a scam. That's exactly what. I have to change it now.
The world's Dashlane. Huh. So LastPass is $1 a month for the professional version.
Yeah, but you can have a free version. Dashlane, one of the things I really like about this is when you do online shopping, it takes screenshots of every page as you're shopping along. So if you never get the email confirmation that you were waiting
nice.
For, there was a confirmation on screen, you have a screenshot of it. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That actually is really cool.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to check it out, Dashlane. And, of course, Jill's column every week in PC Mag, Get Organized. I love it because that's kind of the class. I used to read Hints from Heloise and all that stuff in the newspaper. That's kind of the classic column. Like cleaning tips and stuff like that. And now we've got to do it digitally.
You said you read that?
I loved Hints from Heloise.
Huh.
Did you know you can wrap tin foil around a potato?
And?
Use it to scrub your grill.
And use it to scrub your grill. That's a fantastic concept. I'm going to use that on tonight's barbecue.
Not your gold teeth.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Jill, for being here and putting up with us. Seriously. Really appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you soon. I actually want to talk about email. We should just spend a day just talking about how to handle your email. That's a big one.
We could do that.
Email is a failed technology, in my opinion.
I'm not going to argue the point. I think what we should do, by the way, is get Jill and maybe a few other people, put together a little group and design an email program that everyone should use.
People have tried and tried to find a way to make this work.
Yeah, well, they tried. The problem always tends to be the back end falls apart.
If you cut a potato in half and rub it on the grill before you cook, it'll keep the meat from sticking.
Who said that? I don't think that's always true. I don't think so.
Patrick Deja, you are so realistic, I got nauseous.
Deja vu.
Nice to have you, Patrick. The Phileas Club is no longer with us, but there is Le Rendezvous Tech.
Yes, there is. Le Rendezvous Tech is my French tech news show. It's I've been doing it for a while. If you're interested, if you speak French, if you used to speak French, if you're interested in getting news in French about tech, which makes it easier for you to understand because you already know the subject matter, you can find all of that on patrickbeja.com and the Patreon, by the way.
RDV Tech. Patreon.com/RDV Tech.
Exactly. Patreon.com/RDVTech is the place. I'm not Patrick on Twitter.
Who are you?
Who?
Well, see, everyone says that and then wonders why I'm called not Patrick on Twitter. And what I say is no one ever forgets it. Not Patrick.
But you are Patrick.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
You remember it. That's what counts.
Should I be not Leo? Thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I've always said that. That's been my motto.
Anybody but Leo?
Is my brother's royalty-free music service, every time I mention it on the show, he tells me, what happened? Overnight, I got a ton of visits. So it's musicincloud.com. If you're looking for some really good royalty-free music, you pay the license and that's it for your videos, corporate or anything like that. Just go to musicincloud.com. He does all the music for my podcast, so I'm happy to recommend
him. Is this him playing all of these?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, yeah. Him and his wife do all
that's
of the...
That's really neat.
Yeah. And it's actually... Well, he's my brother, but it's actually really good, so... There you go.
He's like the pamplemousse of France. What does that mean? Grapefruit?
I think it's spelled weirdly, and it's not exactly. I don't know. Maybe it is. Yeah, it is grapefruit.
Don't you speak French? Because if not, you have a very thick accent for no reason at all. I'm just teasing you. Just teasing you. Hey, I forgot to mention. I'm really excited about this. Neil Young's Pono music project is finally on Kickstarter. He's been talking for a long time about making a music player that instead of playing back highly compressed, squeezed down, all the life of it squeezed out music, the Pono, which is a kind of odd triangular form factor, will play back FLAC, uncompressed FLAC audio as high a quality as 192 by 24. Which is considerably higher even than uncompressed CD. 192 kilohertz, 24-bit FLAC files will, you know, because
the amount of money he's got.
Huh? He's raised. He launched this on Tuesday. I immediately got in. I was lucky, too, because.
What do you get for getting in?
I got a Pono player in November, I hope. Hmm. He's raised. He was looking for $800,000 in just a few days, $3.8 million, because this is a great idea. Okay. And because he's Neil Young.
Well, there's that.
And you can get autographed, metal autographed, laser autographed artist signature series from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Willie Nelson, James Taylor, My Morning Jacket.
Should be working
Tom
for
Petty,
Apple.
Metallica. I chose the Neil Young one, which is sold out. But I'm excited. I think this is a big deal. If he can make this happen, and he can get the record companies to give him the original masters. See, that's part of the problem, because these are unprotected. They're not copyrighted.
Oh, no.
I know.
It's not going to happen.
What?
No, it's unprotected. You can't do anything. This is the way.
And this would be the quality of the studio masters.
Yeah, and they're not going to give that away. No.
I want this to happen. I'm so excited.
Well, he's planning the store to go along with
it. PonoMusic.com will be the store once this all takes off. He's got a lot of big names involved in this thing.
Yeah.
Norah Jones.
Lenny no, he's been Kratz. Working on this for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited about this. I'm going to get a little sticker that says I backed Pono.
It sounds obscene.
It doesn't sound good. John, did you have anything? I mean, I know you don't, but it just off the top of your head that you'd like to plug?
Dvorak.org/blog. Okay. I haven't done that for a while. There's also, you can find me on PC Magazine if you look around hard enough. Also, noagendashow.com. I think people know about that. They should go check it out. We still get a Twit listener every month or so say, you've been plugging that thing. I finally listened. It's great.
It's not a bad show, actually.
And so I've done 600 shows and channeldvorak.com.
Good.
Also, DH Unplugged. It's a
what's that?
A stock market show that we do.
Oh, you do with Horowitz.
And so, and we're going to turn that into another model. We're going to do a firewall.
Awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Chad. A couple of things. Can I do some house ads real quick? Thank you, Jill. Thank you.
I love house ads. What are you asking me for?
Real quickly, I just want to mention teespring.com/Twitter. Are we still selling the hoodies? We are. We've sold 471 towards our goal of 300. So that means in a week and 3 days, we're going to have to make some. They're beautiful. The new Twit.
What do they sell for? Hoodies.
Oh, thousands. I don't know. How much they sell for? $35. We have men's and women's, the Bella Women's Fleece.
The women got a zip one?
The only difference between men and women's is the women's have a pointy head.
Well, that makes them look like they're in the Klan.
Oh, they're witches. See that? That's the only difference.
I don't know. It's a
pointy head.
I don't know.
I think there's maybe more than that.
Okay.
And, ladies and gentlemen, we did have quite the week on Twit. If you missed any of it, we have edited it down into 60 seconds that really give you the full scope of the operation.
This I got to see.
Previously on Twit. Twit Live Specials.
The first time I think that we've heard from Edward Snowden since he disappeared, he's kind of reaching out to the tech community and saying, okay, it's your responsibility to make this revolutionary change.
This week in Google.
Google apparently is searching for retail space in New York City.
And maybe there'll be a line around the corner of people who've been locked out of their Gmail account.
Security Now.
What we're holding in our hands, these little iPhones and iPads, they are little crypto bricks. They're amazing instances of applied cryptography.
Mac Break Weekly.
Who do you think looks better in a monocle, me or Tim Cook?
Well played.
Twit. Take it to the bank.
I did get my monitor.
I just don't understand 3D TV. What's the big deal?
I love my monocle.
Yeah.
It's good.
Is it?
Pince-nez
is next.
I want a lorgnette.
With a stick?
A stick.
Yeah.
That's a little stick. You raise it up to look over it and say, we are not amused. Is there a week ahead? All right. Well, let's check in with Mike Elgin, see what's coming up this week.
The annual TED Conference begins Monday in Vancouver, Canada, does the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco. Also, we'll be doing special reports on Tech News Today next week, covering incredible technology projects in Egypt and also Rwanda. So make sure you tune in to Tech News Today each weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific. Back to you, Leo.
TED is in Vancouver now?
This is TED Vancouver.
It's not the TED?
No. There's no, I don't even know if they do the TED anymore.
Of course they do the TED, and they do it. They used to do it in Santa Monica.
They're making so much money on these TEDxs. It's like, geez.
I think it's the TED.
In Vancouver? A TED in Vancouver would be interesting.
It's a great place.
No, I like Vancouver.
Yeah. Huh. Well, that's interesting. We'll follow it
gorgeous
on
gorgeous town,
Twitter.
Eh?
We'll talk about it. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of This Week in Tech. We do the show every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That would be 2200 UTC for those of you around the world who wish to watch live. We love it if you do. If you can't, though, on-demand audio and video is made available after the fact every single episode on demand, twit.tv. That's our website. Or you can go to iTunes or any of the various netcast catchers. And subscribe to the show. Get it every week. I hope you will do that. Thanks for joining us. Remember, give me $1,000. like that, right?
Yeah.
Just at the end of every show.
They'd be pouring in.
Just give me $1,000.
You might be surprised.
Oh, no, no, no. Please don't. Please don't. See?
Really? You don't want it?
Please,
to.
I don't want you to give me $1,000.
This is the kind of insincerity that doesn't work.
Another twit is in the can.
Doing the twit.